Yeah, woo is right. Thank you, Wade. That was fabulous. And so much what we believe in, kind of what I'm going to say, but not in the same way. So I'm not technically challenged. I'm good at this. I'm good at all things technical. Okay. Well, I'm better at it in my head, evidently. Okay, I'm not taking any more time. Mary, can you show that first slide or not? Okay, please show it, because it's not obeying. Okay, so this whole year is about joyous living. And next slide. And this whole month is about living on purpose. And next slide. And today's topic is time for exorcism. A very curious title, to be sure. Next slide, please. So the first thing I thought of when I saw the title was a movie in 1973, The Exorcist. And to help us with that, with that consciousness, the consciousness of fear, I've asked Kimberly Wooldridge to show us a part of the play that she's currently starring in. The play is Walter Cronkite is Dead. Two women are at an airport, stuck at an airport. One a Democrat, the other a Republican. And the Republican is a Southern gal, and she can't stand silence, so she talks a lot. And to hear what is usually going on in most people's minds, but for Patty in Walter Cronkite is Dead, she's talking it right out loud. Please welcome Kimberly Wooldridge.
Are precarious times we are living in. Why, planes getting old and dropping out of the sky. Well, I mean, these times, I bet that's why people here are just acting so calm, because they don't really want to get on their planes now, do they? They're all just acting like everything is fine to keep themselves from running for the exit, screaming their heads off. Because, well, this isn't right. This situation right here, this is not comfortable. Planes getting old, sitting out in the rain at the gates, rusting away by the second. You know, my heart rate is just as normal as can be. Well, now, that is not right. What? We should be disturbed by this. You know, that reminds me about wanting to go see that Exorcist movie when it first came out. Well, my sister, she says to me, now, Patty, don't do it. Don't go. Now, that is the scariest movie that I ever did see. So, of course, I grabbed my husband, Marty, and we went to see it that same night. But, well, let me tell you, now, that was more than just being scared. Mm-hmm. That, I was disturbed by that. Well, the whole country was disturbed. Well, pastors preached on it. There was news articles and magazine covers. Well, it shook the country. Well, we was all looking for the devil around every two and one half corners. And I knew right from the very beginning, well, with all that sand blowing around and that Arab man with one eye and that scary idol statue thing, well, I knew it wasn't going to come out right, because this was the Exorcist. Mm-hmm. This wasn't some boogeyman in the closet or boo jumping out from around the corner or any of those, slasher movies that started to crop up. And that Jamie Lee Curtis, I used to get so mad at her. I mean, look behind you, girl. He is right there. Well, we all knew that he wasn't going to be dead, but there she sat, all crying and all. I mean, get out of the house, Jamie Lee. He is a psychotic killer, and he is still in there, dead or no. Leave! I mean, do you think for one second that if her mama had known that Anthony Perkins had stuffed his mother and then kept her body up in that bedroom, that she would have stuck around and taken a shower? Let me tell you, Now, that woman would have had more sense. She would have gotten herself out of there. So, well, I just don't know what her little Jamie Lee was thinking, all curled up, a-weeping and a-wailing. I mean, that was just stupid. I mean, those were stupid movies about stupid teenagers doing stupid things. But that exorcist now, that was evil. Evil. A creeping into that lovely Ellen Burstyn's rented home right here in Georgetown. What, evil in Georgetown? I'm sorry, but I was like, you know, if it could happen in Georgetown, well, it could certainly happen here in Tennessee. And that poor little Linda Blair. I mean, well, how did you survive something like that? I know it was just a movie and pretending it's fine and all, but well, you don't go pretending with devil. I mean, you don't start pretending with real life because, well, as sure as that Linda Blair had no career to speak of after that movie, you will pay for that.
Thank you so much, Kimberly. When I saw the play Friday night, I thought, oh, I have to ask her to do it for you. I know some of you have seen it, but isn't that the chatter that goes on? All of that chatter about this and that and how easily we can take something that is fiction or a movie and identify with it and have it playing all the time in our head, in our consciousness. And that, today's lesson, the message is about honoring your intuition and ensuring that the fears that keep you from acting on your intuition are cast aside, that you move through the fears, that you honor that one spirit, that one presence within you. So the exorcism I'm talking about is the removal of doubt, is the removal of fear, is the removal of any negativity. That is the exorcism. We, first of all, Ernest Holmes is very, very clear. We believe that the only sin is a mistake. And the only punishment is the natural consequence of those sins, of those mistaken ideas. We do not believe that there is a devil that is equal to God, for God is good and good only. We do believe that people have free choice, free will, and we can use these wonderful, precious minds and our consciousness in any way we like, in any way we see fit, and that can be something that isn't for our highest and best good. It can be something that doesn't bless us, or it can be something that brings us great satisfaction, great joy, great wisdom and love. Yesterday, many of us attended John LaMontagne's memorial service, gravesite ceremony, and then there was a beautiful reception at the Yacht Club. And the one story I want to share with you is about intuition. We heard it at the Yacht Club. His nephew, Tony, told this story, and it was, or it might have been his son-in-law. Anyway, John was a captain on a naval vessel during the Second World War. And during that time, he was, it was 1945, but before the armistice, and he was close to, in the Japanese waters. He was standing guard on the bridge of the ship, and he was on the starboard side. And he was looking, saw nothing, and moved to the port side. And right after he moved, there was shells fired on the starboard side, and people died. He would have definitely been killed had he not listened to that voice of intuition. His family and friends asked him, why did you move? He said, I had no idea. It wasn't something that he knew. It was something he was guided to do. And often that's how seamlessly, how quietly our intuition works for us. It's always guiding you. Your intuition is always guiding you. And most of us don't know what bullets we've missed. We don't know because we don't see the bigger picture. We just sort of go through life. I kind of think of us as like Mr. Magoo's. Go through life and life is happening all around us, but somehow we get to the end of, you know, we get through it all. Knowing that we're safe, that we're blessed, that we're one with this one. These last 4 days in our journal have been the most powerful days. I really trust that you're doing the work, doing the writing, because these are the very best exercises you could be doing, ending with this one. So earlier on in the week, and Mary, if you could go back to, okay, let's try it again. I can't even get it on. Sorry. It's not, I can always tell it. Okay. Okay. So one of the things I like to remind people is that when you take the word devil, D-I-V-I-L, and you write it backwards, what you have is lived. And when we live backwards, then when we experience the devils in our lives. You know, living forwards means that we live with the awareness, first and foremost, God is our source. And God is everywhere present in us, as us. And when we live backwards, we're living out of fear, out of comparison, out of not enough, et cetera, et cetera. So, okay, next one, because I'm still not getting it. This came from Ernest Holmes from the textbook, around page 337, I believe. And students know this. When Ernest writes in caps only, it's like he's shouting at us. He really wants us to get this. And you see, no devil, no hell, no torment, no damnation outside of one's own state of thought. And you know, we've deviled ourselves enough with our state of thinking, with our fearful thoughts. No punishment outside of the self-inflicted through ignorance, and no salvation outside of conscious cooperation with the infinite. Our salvation is our conscious cooperation with the infinite. So why an exorcism? To cast out fear, to release the old story, to live without complaints. So this has been the last few days. You'll find this exorcism on tomorrow's reading. But the last few days, okay, I'm going to go backwards. When we complain, what we're saying is there is something that is not within the divine pattern of well-being, of allness, of wholeness. So it's just a simple little exercise. Make a list of the favorite things you have to complain about, that you complain about, and you'll know. You know already what they are. You know, in Canada, it's the weather. Remember last time when I went to Canada at Christmas, I said, I'm not going to complain about the weather. I filled out a place. They were all complaining about the weather. So your favorite things to complain about, cut the list in half and make a decision not to complain about those things again. And then cut it in half again. Because what often keeps us complaining is exactly what I said, our friends and family. It's the way we fit in. But wouldn't it be better if we were the leaders and said, instead of complaining, I'm praising. I'm going to praise the good around me. And so thereby taught the people around us what, not by telling them we're teaching them, but just by modeling what they could do instead of complaining. They could praise. They could praise something in their life. So, you know, in Canada, in that cold weather, I praised how nice and warm it was in all of the buildings. I praised how dry my feet were and, you know, the wonderful warm scarves that I'd taken with me, et cetera, et cetera. There's always something to praise. So then, to release the old story, each of us has a worldview that includes who we are in it and how we are as people in that story. And as I was driving to the center this morning, a song kept coming through my mind. And Diane might know it. Most of you won't. It's a song called Hi Lily, Hi Lo. And it's a song that the first lyric is, a song of love is a sad song. Hi Lily, Hi Lily, Hi Lo. A song of love is a song of woe. Don't ask me how I know. Now, obviously, I have some of that story. And so it's about making a new story. When you discover that you have a story that isn't serving you and isn't the truth of God in you, write a new story. What a great thing to read every night, your new story. A bedtime story that lifts you up, doesn't scare you to death, and doesn't take you into the doldrums of ain't it awful. So, and then we get to the cast out fear. This wonderful, back to the next one, please, Mary. So we cast out how we do it, list our favorite complaints, notice the self-talk, write a new story. Next. What we will come to know is that what lies within you is infinitely greater than what lies in front of you. In other words, what lies here on the outer is nothing compared to the inner being, the inner truth of us. The inner truth is powerful beyond measure, completely creative. Every single thing that your heart desires, if you use your mind and heart correctly, it's already yours. It's like the story of the guy who goes to heaven and sees this, and God showing around heaven, and he says, but what's that big room? Why aren't you showing me that room? And God, St. Peter, says, oh, I don't want to show you. Why? Why not? It's filled with all these wonderful things. Those are all the things we had for you that you didn't claim. All the things. So what are the things that your heart's telling you, that's for me? A really great relationship? A really satisfying work life, perfect health that's vital and strong, ageless. What is it? What is the dream of your heart? The creativity that is such a joy to do that it feels like fun and play? Whatever that dream is, it is never too early or too late. If you have the dream, and you envision it and move toward it, the universe will support you and bring it to you. Now, in the old days, in the days of Jesus, the devils were, when people were mentally ill, they were said to be bedeviled. And Jesus cast out devils. So when I was looking up exorcism, You can practice the 18 steps, and you can do exorcism the old way of those old ideas of devils right now. But honestly, what good would it do you? Because it's coming from a false idea in the first place. It's coming from an idea that you're inherently bad or wrong, and so it's easy for evil to slip into you. That's a lie. You're inherently good. You're inherently, your essence is good and good only. Over the weekend, I found out that my nephew's mother-in-law committed suicide. And she had been in a deep depression, clinical depression, and she was being treated for it. And I was talking to Reverend Bruce about it a little bit as a therapist, he has, you know, the knowledge both of science of mind and therapy. And he pointed out to me that when someone is in great pain, it's like they're looking at their thumb like this. It's all they can see. They cannot see anything else. So what I know for that family is what I know for you, is that deep in your heart, there is deep peace. It's the peace that passes understanding. You don't need to know why. You don't need to even know how. You just need to make a choice. And standing on it, allow that good not only to indwell you, but to surround you and lift you up. My niece was saying that she felt very responsible for her mother's death. And that was the first thing. You cannot take responsibility for someone else. For someone else's taking whatever you said or didn't say, whatever you did or didn't do. You are responsible for you and you alone. And I am responsible for me. It's such a simple way to live our life and to live fully. Responsible for me and choosing from this moment on to let that thing within you shine through you as love. When you start hearing when you start hearing that scary voice in your head, don't give it entrance. Or if it's already there, say you're just a little tiny thing. You have no power over me. It's a little tiny thing. Don't give it any more power. Let that love that you are shine, shine, shine. I think that's the... Do I have another slide? Okay. Could you... Okay. Thank you. So if exorcism, if we're saying exorcism means to release all of the fears and doubts, are you ready for exorcism? Who's ready for an exorcism? Okay. All right. So... Put your hands on your heart and repeat after me. I love myself. I love myself. I honor myself. I release any fears that I have had. They are no thing to me. And so it is. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you. And now Wade is going to sing another one of my favorite songs, Wade Wooldridge. Yay.